Hi, this is Mary Wilson of the Supremes, and I'll be in town on April 1st. I'm speaking with Rabbi Saul Solomon on Days Gone By, UNC Radio.
Shalom, shalom, my friends. Welcome to the neighborhood with me, Rabbi Saul Solomon, music lover. And boy, oh boy, we have a music legend with us on the telephone this fine morning. She is one of the original members of the Supremes, and she is still a Supreme. This is an amazing thing. Her name is Mary Wilson, and yes, she is one of the singers on the songs that we all know. Stop in the Name of Love, Where Did Our Love Go, You Can't Hurry Love, and probably 50 other songs with the word love in it. She is still performing. As a matter of fact, she will be at the Suffolk Theater on Long Island in Riverhead on Saturday, April 1st. Please go see her, but before you do that, listen to her with us on the phone right now. Shalom, Mary!
Hello there, darling. How are you?
Oh, darling. Ooh, thank you. I'm tingling just from that. How are you? That's the important question. How are you?
Yes, I'm wonderful. I'm just having a ball. I just celebrated my birthday in March, so I'm having still having a great time.
Mit Mazel, have you been healthy? Are things good?
Things are wonderful, yes.
You are touring. You're appearing Long Island here. Does it get tougher as the years go on to get on a plane, to do a concert, to go here, to go there? Or it still feels like you're 20 years old half the time?
Well, you know what? I enjoy what I do. I've enjoyed it for 50-some years, and I still enjoy flying around the world, doing shows with all kinds of people in all kinds of places. And yes, it is still fun.
I think your most recent music was from 2015. You put out a single at that point. Is there new music coming from you, though?
I don't have anything planned right away, but I am working on some things. But when it will be released, I don't know. The sooner the better. But
Okay. The single I was talking about is a song called Time to Move On, which I guess it really says a lot about your life. I mean, the tumultuous years in the Supremes, and then moving on and having the long solo career that you've got. What can people expect when you do your concert in Riverhead? It's a mix of, is it quote-unquote Supremes' greatest hits, and what else?
Well, yes, I always sing, whenever I do a concert, I always sing all the Supremes songs. So it'll be, yes, at the Suffolk Theater, I'll be singing Supremes songs, I'll be singing current material, I do some I do all kinds of material, actually. But yes, definitely the Supreme songs, so they'll know how to sing along with me on all of those songs you mentioned, plus more.
Ooh. Now, here's a question for you, because I ran down the songs that people, of course, know from those early years, the 1960s of the Supremes. What are a couple of songs from some of your later albums, like the 1970s albums even, that that you wish more people knew about, that you wish were as famous as some of those early songs?
Well, I mean, I don't know. You know, we have fans who know all of the songs.
Fair enough.
Up the Ladder to the Roof, Stone Love, Automatic Sunshine, they were all in the 70s, but, you know, a lot of those songs were top 10 hits.
That's fair enough. When we think of certain legendary songs, there's ones that immediately come to mind. But yeah, it's not as if the hits stopped in 1966 or anything like that. That's true.
Right, but and you brought up a good point. Sometimes in the 70s, we released a lot of records, but a lot of people did not hear them because they weren't played as often on the radio. But one thing I can say about the Supremes fans is that they know everything. I was recently in New York City, and I tell you, I saw fans that I knew from the 1960s who are still fans, and they were there just having a ball.
And it sounds like you are really having a ball doing this.
Yes, I do. I still enjoy what I do.
Let's roll it back to your youth, because before you finally made it to Chicago in your early teens and stuff, you grew up in the South. Do you have any specific memories of racism and your family and you facing bigotry?
Okay, but let me clear something up. I was born in Greenville, Mississippi, yes, but I actually grew up in Detroit, Michigan. And in Detroit, pretty much all of the ethnic got acquainted with it more so when we started traveling on those Motown Review tours, and we would have to, you know, sing to segregated audiences and things of that nature. That was, you know, it was pretty bad, but it was the way of the world, well, not the world, it was the way of America at the time, you know, so you kind of knew that you couldn't go to certain places, you couldn't drink out of certain water fountains, you couldn't go to certain restaurants, you know, if they were for white. So that was just the way the law was set, and so you knew that's what was going on.
Would it have been financially problematic or career suicide to refuse to play in the South, to not even go there?
Well, you couldn't do that back then. That was not acceptable. It was a law, and everyone had to follow the law. Now, obviously, when things started changing, you know, and as an Afro-American, you would, or a color person, as we would call it, if you tried to go to a place that wasn't designated for colored people, you could be thrown in jail. And we, you know, we've seen films and things of that nature where it showed that's the way it was. Well, I was alive when it was going on, so those kind of things you just didn't do at a certain time.
You know, no, but I meant, in other words, with all that going on, would you have even thought of, you know what, let's not go below the Mason-Dixon line. Let's just not play there. Let's not go to Atlanta, Mississippi, Missouri.
But you have to understand, that's something that you just did not do because you knew what could happen.
Ooh.
You could be killed. So no, you didn't do that.
Wow. How political were you guys able to be in the 60s? Could you make a mark somehow during that era?
Well, it started a little later on, but earlier on in say 61, obviously, those times you just didn't do it. I mean, you know,
right.
Just as I said, it was a law. So,
but when we were back up north, when you were performing in places like Detroit and New York and California, were you able to speak out and be political at some point?
The point is, you just did not do that
okay.
At a certain time. Now, when the civil rights movement started, that's when people started, you know, organizing and getting things to say, okay, we're going to organize to march against this. Then, yes, it started. People started doing it, being a part of the movement, but not prior to that. Prior to that, it was just, you know, you just didn't do it.
That's fair enough. Now, you, as we have said, are a proud, original, continuing member of the Supremes, and you bill yourself as, Mary Wilson of the Supremes?
Well, you know, now I do sometimes I don't. It all depends on what the event or the venue wants. However, I find it better to say Mary Wilson of the Supremes because then people know exactly who they're coming to see. Sometimes if I just say Mary Wilson, you know, I may not get the crowd that I.
Of course, no, that.
And I don't mind because I'd love to be in the Supreme, but I am just Mary Wilson now.
But the reason I ask that has to do with the billing of bands, which you have been very proactively involved in, of saying, you know, three African American women can't just get together and call themselves the Supremes. You can't trademark a title, but you were, shall we say, very important in instituting something called a Truth in Music Bill. So if you could tell us about that.
Well, the Truth in Music Bill is a piece of legislation that I and a lot of other singers got together, and we lobbied on Capitol Hill in Washington to try to stop people from stealing our names. It's like identity theft. Well, we were having that happen to us in the music industry. Say, for instance, there were lots of groups called the Coasters, the Drifters, and the Platters. Mm-hmm. And then we found that later on, people were starting to form their own groups and like the Supremes, like the Temptations, and say that they recorded this music when they did not. So when the original members of these groups got together and decided to try to stop them, that's where we came up with that Truth in Music piece of legislation. So far, it's been passed in many different states. I think they set up to 20-some states, maybe more now.
So is it at least one original member has to be in the group in order for the group to retain the name. Is that the deal?
That's part of it, and that's one of the most major points of the bill. So what that does is stops these phony groups from forming. But let me tell you, there's still our Supreme groups out there performing that have no right to do so.
Ooh. Well, maybe they're in states where your bill hasn't passed. I guess that would be the problem.
Well, yeah. Even they play where they want to, because sometimes it's not the bill is not no one does anything about it. So it's up to the audiences when they go to these places. If this happens, they can demand their money back and say that they don't want to see that group and help to stop people from performing there. So it's up to the audiences as well to do something about it.
Cool. Now, let me also ask you, speaking of the music industry, that the Supremes and a couple of other of the so-called girl groups inspired a couple of Broadway musicals. Most recently, just a couple of years ago, there was a musical that I did not see called Motown on Broadway. Have you seen it? Did it get your blessing? Are you not blessing it? What did you think?
Well, Motown on Broadway, that is a legitimate play on based on Motown, which is, it was actually written by Mr. Berry Gordy. So it was a wonderful play. It's touring the world right now, in fact. And that was written by, as I mentioned, Mr. Berry Gordy. So I loved it.
Oh, you loved it. Okay. And was it so accurate, not accurate, somewhere in the middle?
No.
But, you know.
Well, when we say accurate, sometimes we have to understand that if this is written by someone at Motown, it may be a different opinion, from what I wrote. But as long as they were there, it was their sort of interpretation of what was going on. And, you've heard this thing where several people see an accident, and they're asked, each person is asked, each one will give a different sort of recollection of what was going on. So that's what happens, because at Motown, lots of us have written books. Of course, mine was a bestseller.
Yes.
My Supreme, my Dream Girl, My Life as a Supreme. That was a bestseller. But, Mr. Berry Gordy wrote a book. I think Smokey Robinson, Martha Reeves, one of the Temptations. So a lot of us have written books of our own sort of recollection of what happened. And all that's legitimate, because, we each have a different idea and an opinion of how it affected us.
Well, yeah, it's the rhythm and blues version of Rashomon, essentially. But, I unfortunately have not had a chance to read your autobiography, Dream Girl, My Life as a Supreme, but it is apparently quite critical of Berry Gordy in some aspects.
I don't think it's critical. I think what I brought out were just things that happen in any industry, in any business. I mean, there are certain things that are geared towards, say, the corporation as opposed to the individual person. So, it's not always ideal what goes on. So I don't think I was being critical. It's just saying that these kind of things that went on, that happened.
So you don't, quote-unquote, blame him so much as the industry itself?
I think it's more the industry than him. It's like they had contracts and things that everybody in the industry had, I brought certain things up about the contracts that was not sort of for the betterment of us, more so it was like for, the company. And, we didn't have lawyers to come in there and say, okay, the girls should have this as opposed to that. Had we had lawyers, we probably would have gotten a better deal. We were young, so we had to take what we were given, and everyone, they take the bigger pie for the corporation, and that's kind of what I was speaking about, more than an individual person.
You needed a Jewish lawyer, by the way. A lawyer would have done okay for you, but a Jewish lawyer would have gotten you 20 more percent. Just saying.
Yeah, that's like saying, Jewish or whoever. But we didn't have anyone, so that was our situation, yeah. So I was more or less talking about that as opposed to, because if I had to be in a record company, I would love to go back and be at Motown, but with a good lawyer to make sure we got a good deal. And that's only logical. I tell you this, we got some great things at Motown that other people didn't get. We had our artist development. We were able record and not necessarily pay for every recording we went in there and did. I'm paying for them now, but not then. But, you know, that's kind of what I was speaking about. I was not trying to be critical. I was just...
Okay.
I kept diaries, and as things happened, I wrote it down.
Now, let me ask the elephant in the room, how are you getting on these days with Diana Ross?
Well, I, you know, the people always ask that, and I'm kind of happy that they do, because it shows that people want you to be the, you know, they enjoy the Supremes, and they want the Supremes to go on forever, and that's the way we are. You know, we don't want anything to stop when we're enjoying it. Unfortunately, our situation ended many years ago, actually, the Supremes and Diana Ross. So I've not been as close to Diane as I would like, and probably as she would like, but the business has dictated that we just go our separate ways, which we've done. But in our hearts, we're still really like sisters.
I mean, do you send each other Christmas cards? Do you ever call each other? Not even in a business way, just to, like, you know, hey, old friend, or not.
Yeah, we, you know, Christmas cards or birthday cards. Yes. In fact, I just celebrated my birthday, and Diana's celebrating hers in a couple of weeks. So, you know, we always kind of talk about that, and that's good.
That is good, yeah.
But we don't hang out as people would like. And so, you know, that happens in life. You grow up and you go your different ways.
But, I mean, I guess people are always all asking if, for a certain amount of money, would you do a 55th anniversary, blah, 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 you know, even a one-off concert for charity or something like that. Any possibility, or you don't see that?
What they say, it ain't over to the fat lady thing.
That's fair. And, of course, the sad part is that the third person, Florence Ballard, she had a pretty rough time, and she's no longer with us. If she were still around, what would you say to her if you ran into her on the street, or you wrote her a letter or something? What would you tell her?
Well, you know what, the same thing I would say to Diane, because we were little children together. I would just say, like, you know, I hope you're happy and I wish you well. That's it. We really loved each other.
That's cool. Let me ask you also, I forgot to mention this. Again, I kind of roll things around chronologically, but the producer of this radio program, Dave, he is an alumnus of New York University. Did you go there?
I went to NYU in the 90s, yes.
For what?
Well, I actually kind of went to their continuing educational program for 5 years, and I studied everything from across the board, because I was not going for my bachelor's. I just got the associate's. So I was able to just pick and choose whatever I wanted to study. And I studied things like psychology, literature. I did the big music classes there. I studied painting. I did all kinds of history. I studied African history. So I did a lot of things that I've always wanted to study, especially literature, yes.
What a wonderful idea of continuing your education. I applaud that. I'm surprised you wouldn't, if you were enjoying it so much, you didn't just go all the way and get a bachelor's.
Well, you know, I started to, but it took me, like, as I said, 5 years to do the associate's, because I was still working and touring, and that was pretty difficult. And I also wanted to study acting, and voiceovers and other things. So I figured I got my associates. That was enough for me. I was not going to go on to become a teacher or anything like that, or anything else. So I did in what I wanted to do, and then now I'm studying other things.
Ooh.
Well, out of school, because it's not a time thing. I can do it at my own leisure.
And let me ask you about the business side of things, in a sense of the music industry over the past 15 years now has gone through this tumultuous change in the way music is distributed and marketed. And, I mean, is it better now than it was having this big label doing everything for you, or not better, or somewhere in the middle? How do you feel about the music industry?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, because I and a lot of artists from my generation probably have the same kind of feelings. In a way, it's great because you can do more or less what you want to do. However, a lot of us are used to having that company to do certain things. Like when you go to certain clubs and you perform, now they all want you to do your own PR. Well, you know, that was something that never happened before. We didn't have to do it ourselves. The company did it for us, you know. And there's no radio that plays all the music. Like, we used to listen to all kinds of music on the radio. Now you gotta, you know, go on the internet. I don't have time to go on the internet to listen to music, you know.
Oh. Do you have an iPod? Do you even, when you go, you're on a plane or somewhere, or transporting somewhere, driving, taking a train, what do you listen to? Do you keep an iPod or anything like that?
Well, actually, I do. I answer a lot of my fan mail when I'm flying or all that kind of stuff. I don't have an iPad to listen to music.
Or CDs. Still have a CD player in your car? I do.
I have my CD player in the car, and I do have on my laptop, I put all my music on there, and I can listen there. But it's not as easy as it was before, no.
Sure.
Well, I used to listen to the transistor radio, you know. Ball tape recorder, the Walkman, you know, where I have boxes of called the cassettes.
Yeah, cassette. I even have 8 tracks, for God's sakes, I haven't thrown out.
And no one, you know, I got this box of, and I don't know what to do with them because I can't play them on anything anymore. So, you know, things are changing fast, and it's not the same, but it's changing, and you got to go along with the changes.
Well, when you do listen to music, Mary Wilson, what do you listen to modern artists? Do you go back and listen to jazz from the 50s, 40s? What do you prefer to listen to when you have time to listen to music?
I'm basically a ballad kind of person. I love Tony Bennett. You know, I listen to Carmen McRae, Nancy Wilson. I listen to jazz pretty much, yes. Vocalist, though. I'm not much on instrumentalist.
We are talking.
I have a show that I put together that is all American songbook songs, and they're. I just finished doing a whole tour of the small clubs in America, where that's what I did, and I love singing the ballad. So that's basically what I listen to as well.
We're talking, by the way, with the delightful Mary Wilson, original member of the Supremes, whom you can go see live singing these kinds of songs in person on Saturday night, April 1st, at the Suffolk Theater in Riverhead. Go to suffolktheater.com, T-E-R, suffolktheater.com for tickets, and marywilson.com for more information and all the things that Mary Wilson is doing. We have a few more minutes with you, I hope, because I do have some more questions, some personal ones, if that's okay. You were married for a period of time, and it was apparently not a good marriage. And I'm wondering, how'd you have the guts to pull yourself out of an abusive relationship after almost a decade in it?
I gotta say that it was not always pleasant, and I know a lot of women have gone through this, and it's one of those things where you fall in love, but you don't know who you're falling in love with. You know, because people have problems, they have baggage, and even though you're in love, this baggage eventually comes out, which it did in our marriage.
Was it physical or just emotional or both?
Well, it was physical and emotional. It was more emotional, but it was some physical abuse in there. And after a while, you know, I realized that, wow, this is not as idyllic as, you know, they make it out in the movies, you know. So I had to eventually get out of it, but it was not easy to do that because I had, by that time, 3 children whom I loved. And also, coming from the Afro-American experience, I wanted to keep the family, the mother and father and the children, you know, together as a family. It was very important for me to do that. So I stayed because of that. However, after a while, you know, I realized that that's not enough. You can't endure that. and I had to fight to get out of it, but I did. I did find the courage to do so. And I know I speak at a lot of different events where it's about abuse, and I try to tell people that you do have to find a way to get out of that, because no one should go through any kind of abuse.
Now, it would be wonderful if I could say that that was the most difficult thing to happen to you, was to be in that long, unfortunate marriage. But, and this is just by sheer coincidence, a number of the folks that I've recently interviewed have lost children. And just, I don't know why that it's turned out like that, but it seems like everybody I've been interviewing over the past, well, a lot of them are old, I have to admit, much older than you. But,
Much older than 73?
Well, I interviewed a 96-year-old poet a couple of weeks ago. So, comparatively, you're a child, Compared to 96, you're still, you're in training wheels, for gosh sakes. But, how do you get over an accident that was an accident, but that you were behind the wheel? So, how do you deal?
Well, I don't really think about that so much. As the loss of my son, because things in life happen. Sometimes they're accidents, and they happen, and you can't go around blaming yourself. You do have to take, as you said, I was driving, but that's not the point. The point is my beautiful son was lost from me in that accident. He was Ralphie was I think he was 14 years old at the time, so it's very young, to leave here, but so beautiful. And you never do really get over it, but like anything in life, you must move on. So that's what I had to do, just move on. But he is forever in my heart and soul.
And by the way, before our listeners jump to any conclusions, it should be said that this wasn't an alcohol thing. There was no drug. I mean, it was a Sunday morning. You had a full night's sleep. You just zoned out for a minute on the road, and crap happens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know how it happened. I really don't know. It was one of those very odd. It just happened. And as you get older, you do realize that sometimes things do just happen. If you sit around forever trying to figure out why, sometimes there's no why. It just happens. Life is not one easy road, linear road. Sometimes things up and down. They just happen. And as I said, it's not something that you get over. The pain is still there. It's always there. But you do learn how to. I tell you what, it's like my other son, Pedrito, said, "Mommy, it's like a hole in my heart." And so it is. It's a hole in your heart, but you still have a heart. Hmm. And you have to work with what you have. And that's kind of what I've done in life. So I miss him daily. I have his pictures everywhere. But I'm still able to be happy. But there's a sadness that will always be in there with the happy.
And making you happy, of course, is that you do have two other kids. How are they? Well, they're not kids anymore, I assume. But how are they doing?
Well, they're great. In fact, my daughter and my son just gave me a birthday party. And so I had not all my grandchildren, but some of my grandchildren and my children with me, and they're wonderful. So you did mention about the husband and the abuse and all this stuff. So there's some good things that happened in that marriage. It wasn't all bad, my children are the most beautiful children in the world, and so and my husband, my ex-husband and I are very dear friends now.
Oh,
he's recently married, and he was at the birthday party too. So, life, you can't hold grudges. Sometimes you may have to keep a distance between some things that happened in the past, but you can't hold grudges. And life goes on. So you got to learn how to live with everything in your life. And it's not what happens. It's how you get over it and keep going. That's really important thing. And it gives you a balance in life, So I'm very happy with myself and my life. And you mentioned my song, which was Time to Move On, is something that was number 15 last year. Well, I should think it's been a year and a half now. That was a great song, and I could have written it myself. I didn't, but it's called Time to Move On. And that's so true. You got to move on from certain things and live in the present.
Well, let me ask you, your ex-husband has remarried. How's your love life going? Anybody special in there?
Well, my grandchildren, my fans.
Oh, no, you know what I'm saying. Is there a boy toy? A potential serious person there?
No.
Are you looking or you don't even... not a big deal?
Well, I mean, you know, it would be wonderful to always have a companion. I think as human beings, it's something we always, you know, should have a happy companion. I don't have that in my life right now. No, just to answer
okay.
the question.
Okay, just wondering. And also, I've got to ask about this because I can't help myself. But, you know, you've been open about having an affair at one point with the one and only Tom Jones. And not the guy who wrote the musical The Fantastics, but, you know, the It's Not Unusual guy. So, how was he?
Oh, Tom, he's great. In fact, unfortunately, he just lost his wife last year or so. And he and I were talking about it, and you know, he's really devastated about that. But we're dear friends.
Oh, well, that's lovely. I didn't. Okay. Yeah. But it wasn't a full. Were you just friends then, or did you actually have an affair?
Then or now? No, we're just friends.
No, now you are. But I'm saying, you know, he's been married. He was married for 50-something years. You had an affair. Was he as hot as he is on stage?
Oh, you know what? That was when we were extremely young. We were still in our 20s.
Oh, it was, well, okay. Okay.
Yeah, but he's a very nice guy. And as I said, our friendship has lasted for many, many years. And it's just a friendship for many years. But, you know, sometimes that's what love is all about. It's about friendship. But, you know, when you're young, you don't know what friendship is. You know, you just go for the attraction. You know?
Okay.
And if you're fortunate, you can forgive yourself, they can forgive themselves, and you can just be friends. I have a lot of male friends that I dated back many years ago, and we're just friends now, you know, which is a really wonderful thing.
It is, and it has been wonderful, and you mentioned the word fortunate. We have been fortunate to have this wonderful conversation with Mary Wilson. Remember to go see her at the Suffolk Theatre on Saturday, April 1st. For more information, go to suffolktheatre.com and also her own website, marywilson.com. I guess the last question that we have for you, and we're so grateful that you've taken the time with us, is what are one or two of your most proud moments as a performer, either with the Supremes or as a solo actor, both?
Okay, I'm glad you said as a performer, because I was going to say my best feelings and happiness was having my children.
Sure. I figured that would be the answer to that one, so I snuck in the word performer in there.
I understand, but I have to make that very clear.
Sure.
Because it's very important. The career is what you do. You know, living your life is who you are. And having my children was the miracle that just made me know what life was all about. Now, for my career, the first thing that was so wonderful was when I met Flo, Diane, and Betty, the fourth member of the Primettes, the Supremes. That was the one of the best moments of my life, because it really did make me know who I was as a performer, as for my career, because at that point I realized this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And these people made me know that. So they're like my sisters, and that's the best thing that ever happened to me, because it really fulfilled my life as well. So my life has been great because of the two elements. Some of the things that we did as the Supremes, you know, the command performances in England, the touring here in America and the world with the Supremes around the world, meeting royalty, performing with people like Nina Horn, Sammy Davis, Bob Hope, you know, those were great, great moments. I mean, you've read the book, so I mean, a lot of the moments are right there. They're just great, great. It's been a great life.
Well, it certainly has, and the book, again, to which Mary Wilson is referring is Dream Girl, My Life as a Supreme, and it has been a supreme pleasure talking to Mary Wilson in the neighborhood today. I wish you much continued health, music, and success, and shalom to you.
Shalom.